Find his work, as I always like to say, on the front page of the sports section. Today's piece about the NFL. Catch up online, registerguard.com. Follow on Twitter, the handle at AustinMeekRG. Austin, how are you today, sir?
Hey, Steve, I'm doing well. How are you?
All right. You did Daisy Ducks this morning. That's always a great experience. It's a very happy place, isn't it?
Yeah, it really warms my soul, honestly, to be there. It is a very happy place. You know, I spoke at the Oregon State Penitentiary last week, so I think I got both sides of the spectrum between that and the Daisy Ducks.
All right. Sorry, I'm going to need you to elaborate a little bit on that one.
Well, it's actually... Yeah, it's actually a really cool deal. There are some people here in Eugene who are involved with the athletic club at the Oregon State Penn, and so they will bring in various people much more distinguished than me to speak to that group, and it's guys who are incarcerated in the prison who participate in this. They do all kinds of different things. They have a running group, and they have basketball tournaments, and then they have a meeting with this club every couple weeks, so I was... privileged to go speak to them last week, and then I did the Daisy Ducks today.
So I know you're from Kansas. Am I to assume that you've been lying to us and you were really at Leavenworth?
I'm going to plead the fifth on that one. Right. What happened in Kansas, that was a former life.
Well done. Last week you wrote about David Vibora, who's a local kid, I think he's 30 now, went to Idaho, became Mr. Irrelevant as the last pick in the 08 draft. So let's begin with a catch-up. I mentioned he's only 30, been out of the NFL for 5 years. Where is he and what's he up to?
Well, David's a busy guy. He lives in Dallas now. He opened a gym there. He's got a pretty interesting story about his life after the NFL. He had a shoulder injury when he was playing for the Seahawks about 4 years ago and actually ended up in rehab with a painkiller addiction. He was very determined to get back to the NFL after that injury, but then got to a point where his body was healthy enough, but he just wasn't feeling it anymore. So he moved to Dallas. He opened a gym, and he started working with disabled people in the adaptive training world. Works with a lot of combat veterans who have lost limbs, and helps them learn how to get past their limitations and exercise and work out and train maybe differently than they did before their injuries, but still in a way that's rewarding for them. So it's pretty cool work that he's doing down there in Dallas.
No, it was an awesome story. I also want to get to Duck Women's Basketball. Season 3 under Kelly Graves. He's a favorite of ours on this show. They were in the hunt for the tournament last year before Jillian Aileen got hurt. Three excellent starters, probably the most heralded class in program history. And your angle was interesting, that a lot of talent, but what did Coach Graves have to say about, you know, selling the art of sacrifice, I guess, to make everything work?
Yeah, he told kind of a funny story. A couple weeks ago, I guess he had all the players anonymously write down how many minutes they expected to play this year, and the total was like 270 per game, which is 70 more than you can actually play. So obviously somebody is going to have to make a little bit of sacrifice to make this work. But that's going to be a really interesting team this year. They have a ton of talent. I was a little surprised they were picked seventh. I guess it sort of makes sense when you look at it from the surface, because they did lose Jillian Aileen, their best player, and they are really going to be relying on a bunch of freshmen. But, man, there's a lot of talent on that team, a lot of size. If they can put the pieces together, I think they could be really good, but they are going to be really young.
Yeah, I saw you mention that you were a little surprised by where the media picked them. Have they talked about it, or what, once the season starts, it doesn't matter?
Yeah, I was curious, you know, what they would say about that, if they would come out and say, oh, we really thought we should have been higher. They didn't exactly say that. I think Kelly Graves is probably trying to temper expectations just a little bit, because he probably realizes that, you know, as much talent as they have and as excited as people are for this freshman class, when you're relying on young players every night, there's going to be some ups and downs. No matter how talented they are, Oregon's going to have some highs and lows and some bumps in the road this season. But the upside for them is really high. You know, I think they could finish a lot higher than seventh. I sort of see seventh place as kind of the floor for them, you know.
Sure.
That's sort of the baseline, but I think they could be better than that.
The article today, as we continue with Austin Meek of the Register Guard, we actually talked about it last week, the NFL TV ratings, almost unthinkable, going downward. And, you know, what you wrote in one of your last paragraphs, when you incorporate all these factors, and especially for Monday Night Football, once seen as unique, it's like, am I on base here? It's something's lacking. It just doesn't seem special anymore.
No, that's been my observation as well. I mean, as a kid, Monday Night Football had this aura about it for me. And maybe a little bit of this is nostalgia. And embellishing what I remember from when I was a kid. But I just remember Monday Night Football being the coolest thing, you know. And I think part of that was really the only night of the week that you got to watch the NFL. You didn't have Thursday night and you didn't have Sunday night. It was all about Monday Night Football. And that just has eroded over time. You know, there's the same number of NFL teams, but now there's way more windows to fill. And so you end up with games like we had last night with, you know, Bears and the Vikings, and with apologies to our friend Fentress, who's a big Bears fan. I don't think many people in Eugene were very fired up about that game. It's just the Monday Night Football has really lost a lot of the luster that it used to have.
I agree. I mean, I remember the first one. It was a big deal when I was, like, in middle school. I was allowed to stay up till halftime, but that was on the East Coast when it started at 9. I want to get to Oregon football, start with Justin Herbert. He's really interesting. The Washington game, he rebounds, he's better. The Cal game, he's playing great to rally the team. It ends in heartbreak. Then he bounces back with that performance. You see a connection with his, in essence, being the man the next few years, and maybe that ties into some stability for the head coach?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of Mark Helfrich's future is going to come down to the question of, where is this program headed? And, you know, a few weeks ago, it really looked like Oregon was headed in the wrong direction. And I think they've stabilized that a little bit with the move to Justin Herbert, because, you know, the talking point now has become man. So in three starts, this kid ties the Oregon single-game record for passing yards, and he ties the Oregon single-game record for passing touchdowns, and he becomes the first quarterback in school history to surpass 500 yards of total offense in a game. That's in three starts, and now he's got three more years to play. You know, the mind can come up with some pretty intriguing possibilities of where this kid can go. So it has changed the conversation a little bit in terms of Mark Helfrich, because, you know, he can point to Justin Herbert and say, hey, everybody was all worked up about the fact that we couldn't find and develop a young quarterback after Marcus Mariota. Well, now we have one, and the future looks really bright for him. And if people can be a little bit patient here, then this guy can get us back to where we want to be. I think that's one of the arguments that you can make in favor of Mark Helfrich remaining as the coach.
You know, the comparisons to a Marcus Almighty have been coming, actually. And it was, I think you nailed it. Great dual threat, soft-spoken, crazy skills. He seems to be over himself. And I think you said, while the comparison might be lazy, if you listen to knowledgeable observers, just because it seems obvious doesn't make it any less accurate that he's got those Mariota-ish qualities.
Yeah, it's impossible not to make that comparison. Anybody who sat in a press conference with Marcus Mariota and listens to Justin Herbert, it's pretty uncanny. Just, you know, the mannerisms, the way they conduct themselves, definitely two quarterbacks that are cut from the same cloth. And also just the story. You know, Mariota wasn't a big-time recruit. He wasn't a five-star prospect. He was a kid from Hawaii who was a good athlete who surpassed everything that anybody expected of him at Oregon. And so far it's been similar with Justin Herbert. You know, I remember sitting in the stands at Sheldon High last October watching Justin Herbert in a playoff game and thinking, well, you know, this guy's pretty good. He could play at Oregon eventually, but in no way, shape, or form could I have predicted what he's done as a true freshman. So there definitely are some echoes of the Mariota story there, even though I think Mark Helfrich is probably right to pump the brakes on that a little bit. It has only been three starts.
Yeah, don't reach for the stars or anything, the best player in the history of the program.
Yeah, right.
Let's wrap with Cubs-Cleveland. Game five was just awesome. I mean, I could go back to some of the great World Series games, and being older, I've seen like every one for 46 years. They buried Sunday Night Football in ratings with the Cowboys playing. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, this World Series, I'm a 12-year-old. I can't get enough. So impressions as we hit Game six, you enjoying this, the historical angle or whatever you're seeing?
Yeah, it's been fun. You know, not to bring up what I know is a sore subject for you, but my only regret is that game six and seven won't be at Wrigley, which, you know, if baseball determined home field the right way,
yep,
and gave it to the team with the best record, then that would happen. And I can't imagine that scene at Wrigley. If the Cubs had a chance to, you know, win a Game 7 to win the World Series, that would be so cool. It'll still be cool in Cleveland. As somebody pointed out to me today, it actually maybe helps the Cubs because they can play Schwarber at DH,
right,
in Hale Park. But I still kind of wish, after seeing that scene in Chicago and how crazy it was, I wish we had Game 6 and 7 there.
No, I agree. I thought that way the Fox people stayed with the shots of the Cubs fans singing and raising the W after that home win. That was Goosebump City. All right. Hey, good stuff as always. Try to stay out of the penitentiaries and travel safe to Troy. And we'll talk next week. Always appreciate your time, Austin.
Yeah, I only go voluntarily. That's okay. The goal. Thank you.
Take it easy.